If you enjoy Astronomy FM Radio, please let us know with a small donation. We do rely on your support, and it's true. Every little bit counts.
AFM. You're listening to AFM Radio on astronomy.fm, around the world and beyond.
Arr. Coming up next, it's time for an AFM Radio original program, Space Pirate Radio, brought to you by the Voice of Astronomy MIDI. This is astronomy.fm.
The pirates are coming. The pirates are coming. The pirates are coming. You better watch.
Arr. It's Space Pirate Radio time. Buckos here on Astronomy.fm Radio. And that, of course, means it is another Wednesday evening. This one is October the 18th, 2017, 9 o'clock in the morning. For those of us in the eastern portion of North America, also known as 1 o'clock in the morning, October the 19th, 2017, Universal Time. So if that happens to be your time right now, that means you are listening to us live. And we will rebroadcast this program every 4 hours for the next 24 hours. But for the next hour, you've got us live. And that means, yes, our astronomy.fm chat room is open. And time for you to climb aboard, everybody. And join us. It's easy to get here. Just go to our homepage, astronomy.fm. You'll see where it says radio chat. Click on that. You get to the login. Type in a name. Click login. And you'll be here in our chat room. And part of our evening crew tonight, I, of course, am Captain Marte with my co-host tonight.
John Foote.
Hey, John.
Everybody. Hi.
Glad to have you here tonight. John's taking over
fill
for
in.
Diane.
Filling in,
yes, for Diane tonight. Glad to have you here. So we got a pretty good amount of crew so far. We've got you and me. We've got Aqua for You, Glenn, Optronics, Evil Spock, Richie, Plaid Mac, Plaid Joan, and Plaid Sister all... Welcome aboard, everybody. All right, time to weigh anchor and set sail for the universe
and beyond. Gravity waves.
Infinity and beyond, I like that. I always like that one.
Yeah. We could ride some gravity waves.
Want to ride some gravity waves?
Man, it's a busy week, wasn't it?
That's kind of a popular thing, a bit in the media about gravity waves. First gravity waves dually detected, want to put it that way.
Yeah. From the merger of neutron stars. Yep. That was exciting. We gave hints about this in August and September. I had picked the wrong date. I said there was going to be an announcement in the middle of September. Sorry, we were wrong. I really thought they would, but when they come out and they announced a week later, it was the merger of black holes. I went, oh no. Had my hopes up.
Uh-huh.
But it was like, wow, there was an awful lot of work being done out there, because you were looking at all the systems, because they have public records like Hubble Space Telescope,
mm-hmm.
and you can see they're on targets of opportunity, and somebody gets bumped off the list because the scope has to do some emergency surveying, and it's listed right there. It's gravitational wave, possible gravitational wave detection. So when I looked at what Hubble was looking at, it's open to the public. Anybody can look at it. I couldn't make out. It just looked to me like, okay, well, it must have been something happening to the in the galaxy itself, the merger and somewhere around the center of the galaxy. Oh, pretty cool, because it's just a bright galaxy. I never noticed a little dot. But that's what it was. It was a pair of neutron stars. And that was really exciting, because now it involves everybody for a change.
Mm-hmm.
Gravity waves by themselves is like, oh, we know they merge. We know that.
Well, we're starting to know that, because we've only had like 4 mergers recorded by LIGO and Virgo, I think it is.
Virgo, yeah. Virgo played a unique role in this one. It didn't really detect the waves.
Uh-huh.
And the reason why it didn't is because it was in this blind spot.
Okay.
But taking advantage of which blind spot it was behind, it helped narrow down the search even more.
Oh, yes.
So it brought the search area down to like 49 galaxies.
Uh-huh.
29 galaxies. Like, great. So everybody started scrambling in a hurry. They found it on the fifth galaxy.
So this galaxy is NGC 4993, located 130 million light years from Earth in the constellation of Hydra. And I put a link in our chat room. This one, where is this one? From SciTech Daily.
About everybody everybody has links to it.
Yes, all the astronomical publications have links to it. So they first detected. Well, there was a gravity wave detection, and then there was the a gamma ray burst, and then all the telescopes pointed in this direction, and they actually saw a little bright spot appear. Is that next to a galaxy? Is it?
Yeah, just right ahead of the galaxy. Comes on like a supernova.
Yeah.
And then it goes out.
Yep. But the fade rate is
different. Turned red. Like, I'd never seen the red color in either. Mm-hmm. I'd heard rumors that it did turn red. No way. Because that was the signal for our processes, how they make gold and platinum. Everybody heard the gold part. All the heavier elements that stars don't make. And they are created in the in these collisions.
Ah, cool. So it faded rapidly and was undetectable in UV when Swift looked at it again on the 29th. When did they first? Oh, they first looked at it on the 18th of August when they looked at it in UV on the 29th, about 11 days later, undetectable. So and cool.
Yeah. 16, yeah, no neutrinos. Okay. Sorry. And about 16 days later, the radio showed up.
Ah, okay.
But what was really exciting about that gamma ray burst and the gravity wave showing up, is they traveled together all this time.
Mm-hmm.
And that really helps explain or helps eliminate a lot of modified gravity theories, which predicts certain things will happen at that flatness of space.
Mm-hmm.
No, these things ran smoothly all the way through. Mm-hmm. And gravity waves do travel at the speed of light.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So much stuff is finally confirmed.
Yeah. Well, the big thing was they got a lot of different types of telescopes pointed at this object, and they were able to do different types of science with the different types of telescopes. So they have a gamma ray telescope, optical telescope.
3,500 authors alone on this multi-messenger observation. Binary neutron star merger. Papers after papers.
Got Swift, Hubble, Chandra, and Spitzer. Plus a whole bunch of ground base.
It's the universities, but you got to really give a lot of credit to all these universities and these institutions that really have these connections built now.
Mm-hmm.
Working relationships, team relationships. There's like decadal projects where a committee will be responsible for trying to pick out what surveys to do or how to plan for the next 10 years. And one of the big things they did about 10 years ago was make sure they had these large collections of people working together so that they could turn on a dime and capture these events. Because when Supernova 1987A went off, nobody got to take a really good look at it till the next day.
Yeah.
Messages weren't received. Other instruments that did pick up stuff weren't sharing their information. Other countries weren't sharing. It was like, no, this is our satellite and it's proprietary.
Uh-huh.
That all changed. With that Supernova 1987A, that all changed.
Yep.
And you can really see the cohesiveness now in the science community as a whole. And all the wonderful stories, people excited to receive the messages, they're on their emails. Get on your email. Get on the system right away. Everybody's got a unique little story to tell. It's exciting. It's one of those ones you're going to be telling your grandchildren about. This is big.
As your grandchildren are scientists.
Well, you're going to be telling them anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's going to be maybe the neutron stars will get bigger as time goes on. Who knows? Mm-hmm. In your story.
There you go. All right, so that's a cool one. That's a nice, good space party, nerdy story.
Many great human interest stories in it. That's the thing.
Yep.
The young scientists that get to try it, too, just starting out. Senior scientists, like the educators and the leads, prime investigators.
Mm-hmm.
Just it's nice. Now there needs to be something else that everybody can work on together.
Yes, indeed. Well, we have to have more spectacular events happening, that's all. We're due for a supernova.
Well, now that you can detect these, and they know they can detect them, but they have to be relatively close within 300 light years. And this one came in at, what, 170?
130, I think it was.
130? Yeah. Yep. 130 million years, 130.
So I wonder, I don't know if this, I have to look up my notes and see if I can check and see if I've ever seen this galaxy or not. That'd be interesting to see if I've actually observed it. So I've observed a bunch of the NGCs, but I'd have to look it up and find it out. I'll figure it out.
Well, when I first looked at it, it gave me a little hint, like the way some stars line up of the Orion Belt. You have those three stars that come down together.
Uh-huh.
It has a little bit of that in it.
Okay.
With a nice little, sort of look like the Black Eye Galaxy. Once they, you know, these images are stacked. So when you first get, when you're taking a look at whatever publicly is being shown, like Hubble's like the favorite for everybody because it'll actually show you what Hubble's looking at. You know, it's not a stacked image. It's just what you see. But, you know, you have to stack a few of these over hours and different instruments. And that's where they brought out the colors.
Mm-hmm.
And they predicted that this would turn into a deep red and go deeper out.
Mm-hmm.
And people went, oh, no. You know, well, they'll never see that.
Uh-huh.
Or they were disappointed that that's what would happen because this, theory-wise, in order to make all these metals, that is what would be happening. But they go, well, we'd never see two neutron stars collide and then just capture this light. You'd have to be so lucky to be sitting on it. But here with the gravitational wave detector, you can work together.
Yep.
Now, there is some, you know, you got the Fermi satellite running, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Optical, hopefully, will evolve more where it'll lead gravity first. It'll lead the gravitational wave instrument. It'll predict an event for the gravitational wave detector to come in.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, with the neutron stars, where they merge and stuff together. Because there is going to be lucky. There's precursor events that they've got to go back and search for.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a flaring event that just one system might have captured? Or because there's precursor events to these guys coming in together. They've been doing this dance around each other for 11 billion years.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. And the first ones, the House Taylor, they're the ones that found the first pair of neutron stars orbiting each other. Now, they're not going to go together for another couple million years.
Mm-hmm.
They're still spiraling towards each other, but they're still at a major distance apart. But as they spiral down, their energy is being converted into gravitational waves. And it predicts the luminosity of the two stars.
Okay.
And that was the first test of gravitational waves and general relativity. That was from 1982.
Yeah.
They were both awarded the Nobel Prize in late 90s for it.
Cool. Okay.
And this is another one of those pairs, House Taylor stars.
Nice. And obviously there are going to be more of those too. So.
Yeah. But the instruments are down for about a year.
Yeah.
Italy's got to become more refined. Its wires are a little thicker that it hangs its instruments from.
Uh-huh.
This is really the shortcut version of the story. So their other hangars are produced now and ready to be installed. LIGO and them are being upgraded. They'll be more sensitive now. They're picking up an extra couple of, I don't know how they measure it. But it'll be more sensitive when it comes back online. So the three of them will work together. Plus, Japan will be online. And Europe will be online. So there could be four of them.
Nice.
Five of them.
All right.
That'll help with triangulation. And being able to pick up more neutron stars.
Like you said, no data is good data. So if somebody can't see it, that eliminates one spot in the sky. Helps it pinpoint it a lot faster.
That was a weird one. But yeah, that happens. That side was blocked by the sun.
Ah.
And by being blocked, there's only interferometer, there's four directions, northeast, southwest. It's northeast, north, south, whatever. There's four angles in, and if it comes in on one of those four angles, it will not trigger the detector.
Mm.
Due to the symmetry of the waves and the position of the detectors.
Uh-huh.
But that also says, hey, you know, I'm coming in from a blind spot, and it's a little more accurate to trace back from a blind spot.
Yeah.
And this is what it was. It hit blind spot. So by hitting a blind spot, it narrowed the search range down even more.
Cool.
And I get to enjoy. I've enjoyed many of the good stories they've been telling. Each individual system, different universities, how excited they were.
You can look them all up individually, too, and read their stuff.
Yes. Oh, there's lots. But there's still, now that they have the data, there's still a lot of data to sift through.
Yeah.
How okay. common, how much straight to theory. This is another one where theory was ahead of survey results.
Uh-huh.
And it's coming right in predicted. The color, the deep red, how much was turned into precious metal. I heard a couple of different numbers here on this precious metal. One section I heard was like half an earth's worth of gold.
Okay.
Produced. And then another one, a much heavier reading, said no. It was hundreds of earths worth of gold.
Hmm.
It's quite a discrepancy. I do not know the answer. I didn't know. I don't even know how to go about getting the correct answer without being hopefully told.
Well, we wouldn't want that much gold. If you had a whole plant full of gold, then
dirt would be precious.
Exactly, yes. Or iron, for instance. I think that was a Lost in Space episode. Remember that?
No, that one's not ringing a bell, but it sounds like a good one.
Was there a pirate in that one? Because I remember, I think there might have been a pirate episode, coincidentally. And it was all about Billy Bones. I remember, Billy Bones is treasure. And because they were saying that, you know, they lived on a planet full of gold. Everything was gold. And so then they started to think, what would be valuable on a planet that has excessive amount of gold? And yep, it was a chest full of iron ore. That was it. Remember that episode? I'll have to look that one up again. All right, I'll give you a little rundown of what's happening in the sky coming up this week or so. We've got, let's see, already past Tuesday. All right, Venus today, it was actually early this morning. Venus was 2 degrees south of the moon. Maybe you got to see that. Uranus is at opposition, and tomorrow will be a new moon. So if you want to get out some observing, this will be the weekend to do that for deep sky stuff, actually. As long as your weather's clear, of course. So with the moon out of the way, or we'll just be getting a couple of thin crescents for Friday and Saturday and Sunday and stuff like that. So the moon will be setting early enough, and if you want to get out and do some deep sky observing, this will be the weekend to do that. Next Tuesday, Saturn will be 3 degrees south of the moon, and it's a week from Friday, first quarter moon. So that's it. That's about it for what's happening in the sky as far as moon and planets. Not too much going on with the sun, though. It's a pretty poor-looking sun. No sunspots right now. A few minor coronal holes. Solar wind is way down. Particle density is way down. Speed is only 345 kilometers per second. That's pretty slow. Density, 3.54 protons per cubic centimeter. That's pretty low. So the sun's not doing a whole lot of nothing.
No, you know, if the sun was a teenager, you'd be like demoralized now completely.
No ambition on the sun right now. That's
no ambition.
Yep.
What are you going to do with the rest of your life, son?
My son. Oh, let's check out some near-Earth space rocks. Got one coming pretty close. Actually, tomorrow, which technically it is tomorrow, we've got a rock that's about 40, 45 feet in diameter, something like that. But it's going to be half the distance to the moon. So that put it at about 125,000 miles away from us. And that's asteroid 2017 D6. Going to be flying by. And that's the closest one for a while. Got another one the day after that. It's about 1 million miles away. That's only about 30 feet in diameter. So nothing really big. Nothing. That's the closest one. Nothing too spectacular. Yesterday, there was actually like four of them that flew by everywhere.
Interesting.
Yep, everything from 20 feet to about 100 feet. No, less than that, about 75 feet. And they're all about the one lunar distance, 1.2 lunar distances. Farthest one was 1,000,000 miles. Next one, 750,000 miles. So there's a bunch of them. There's like four of them, four or five of them yesterday and the day before. So they're getting a bunch of moderate-sized rocks, 50-footers flying by lately.
Okay, no, just out of coincidence, because it's always coincidence. I tried to look earlier. There was some conversation about a fireball coming in over Sri Lanka today.
Okay.
Yeah. Now that it did a little bit of a light up in the sky.
Oh, interesting.
And had sound associated with it. Mm-hmm. But I haven't been able to catch more on that one. As soon as I get looking for that one, there seems to be lots of them happening, the catching on film.
Yep. What do we got?
I don't know how big this was. It mentioned the fireball. What the light and sound was that came over Sri Lanka was a asteroid.
The sound, usually don't get much sound because they're usually like about 60 miles high, and at 5 seconds per mile. Takes quite a while for the sound to actually get to the ground after you see it. So you won't have sound at the same time that you actually get the light. So it takes several seconds after that. So I don't know what sound they were hearing. Here's All Sky Fireball Network, also on Space Weather. It says on October 18th, 2017, the network reported 60 fireballs. Wow. That would be worldwide.
Well, what if that's on average? I wonder if that's an average day.
It looks a little heavy, actually, to me.
Does it?
Looking at this chart, yeah. They've got a chart here with loops on it. That's the predicted path of these objects when they hit us. And it looks like definitely a lot more loops than what I usually see. So definitely a little bit more activity. And same thing with the near-Earth asteroids. Looks like a bit more activity right now. Wonder why. Maybe we're hitting a heavy, heavy area. Season or the Earth's orbit or something like that.
Do they have the Chinese space station on that asteroid falling out of the sky?
Nope, they don't have that. They do have a pyramid picture. This would have been for Diane. The space weather balloon that they launch. Where's this from? I can't remember who launches it, but there's a group of students at that launch weather balloons with radiation detectors and things like that. It's called Earth to Sky Calculus.
Oh, cool.
Space weather balloon. And they always do the reports on spaceweather.com. And they actually launched looks like a little either glass or plastic pyramid, which you can actually buy. So Diane hates when I do pyramid stories.
Yeah, there was one earlier I found there were talk about a volcano might have did in Egypt's first civilization.
Oh, wow. That's not a pyramid. Well, it's Egypt's pyramids or close enough.
I just love the way she handles them. She's, you know, she doesn't trash them. She handles very professionally, very sleek, nice.
Uh-huh.
I just like the way she does it.
Yeah,
that's why we like hand them to her.
I like to throw it. Yeah, the wackiest pyramid stories possible.
The initial frustration she delivers to you is worth it.
That's right.
Then she brings in the professional and she just cleans it right up for you.
Uh-huh.
So Diane, hopefully I'm keeping your seat warm. We'll see you next week.
Mm-hmm. Where were you going with Chinese space station?
Yeah, wasn't that set to come down next year?
Yep.
Or I'll put that in the chat room.
Is that Qianggong 1, I think it is?
Sounds good to me.
Heavenly Palace is, it's been up there for a little while, hasn't it?
It's an 8.5 ton.
Okay. And it's out of control. This is not a controlled crash. Which they, if they plan on it, you know, they can usually use some thrusters and maneuver it and angle... angle solar panels, give it a little push at the right time, a little pull, a little twist. If they can activate, controlling thrusters, keep it at a certain angle. So
trying to get it into the Pacific.
Yeah.
This could have 220-pound chunks left onto it.
Uh-huh.
Or 100 uh-huh. kilos.
And the problem is they don't have control of it. It's just coming down.
Well, then they need an AFM herd hat, Marty.
Yeah.
I'm going to slide that in, brother. I'm sliding it in. They need an AFM herd hat, bro.
There you go. Glenn, I know I still owe you one. I have to try another run on making one for Glenn. It's a little better suit I could do. But for everybody, get your own Astronomy.fm hard hat guaranteed to protect you from asteroids, meteorites, aliens, space debris. Where else we want to guarantee with? Otherwise, if it fails to protect you, I will replace it for free.
That's all you get, just a free replacement.
That's correct, yeah.
Not covering medical. That does not cover medical, dental, lost time at work or anything.
That's new. That's correct.
But you do get to keep the famousness for being hit with something.
Yeah, actually, if you get hit on your Astronomy.fm hard hat, it would be worth a ton of money.
It's all yours.
Yep, and it's all yours. You get to keep it. There you go. We'll be generous that way. All right, so we'll see when this thing comes down. It's supposed to be a few months.
Late 2017, early 2018.
Mm-hmm. Out of control. Could come down anywhere. I didn't look at the angle of its orbit, how much it's tilted to the celestial equator. That would tell us at what maximum latitude you might be in danger of, having pieces of it falling in your area. I'll have to look that up maybe for next time and see if anybody's got an orbital diagram of it that gives an idea of how far north and south it actually goes and let you be able to figure out if you're in the danger zone or not. Could be anywhere in the world. See what happens. And if parts survive, fortunately there's mostly water, but it is possible to hit land. I wonder if you get to keep it. Probably not.
Depends what country you're in.
Yep. Usually not this country. Let's see. Yeah, a couple more minutes to the halfway point. So keep an eye out for that, and we'll keep you updated too. There's a possibility if it doesn't crash on you, you might actually be able to see it streaking into the Earth. That'd be kind of cool too. Get some good pictures that way.
Yeah. 2018 is busy. We were supposed to have the web launch in 2018.
Yeah.
This time next year, that's not happening, eh?
It doesn't look like it yet. They're still progressing on it?
Yeah, it looks like they're moving it up to the spring of 19 or to early summer.
Okay.
2019.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to be too old to care when that thing goes up, but I hope it gets up for you. Really?
Yep. And hope everything works well with it, functions properly, and we should be able to get some spectacular images.
A lot of eggs in one basket. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of eggs. That's a big, big piece of the next 10 years, 15 years of science collection in astronomy, mm-hmm. and astrophysics. That got pushed ahead.
Yeah. Well, see what happens. All right, let's see. We're kind of close enough to.
Well, I've been dragging it. I've been dragging my feet for a second, seeing if I can stretch just a hair. We're waiting for the bottom of the hour to timestamp.
That's right. So we might as well go for it. So you are. Say R.
R.
Good.
Like Diane.
Just like Diane.
R.
There you go. You are listening to Space Pirate Radio here on Astronomy.fm Radio. It is Wednesday evening, October the 18th, 2017, at about 9:30 in the evening for those of us here in the eastern portion of North America. Universal time, I would put it at 1:30 in the morning, October the 19th, Thursday morning, 2017. So we're halfway through our show, and of course that means we are still live, and more than welcome to come on over and join us in our chat room. Get to hear from the homepage, astronomy.fm, or type astronomy.fm/chat. That'll get you, either way, it'll get you to log in. Type in your name, hit log in, and you will be here. Consider you part of our crew when you join the chat room. And right now we've got you and me. We've got Aqua for You, Glenn, Evil Spock, Richie, Plaid Mac, Plaid Joan, Plaid Sister, the whole Plaid crew, and Optronics in so far. So if you have an astronomy question for us, come on over to the chat room and ask us. And we'll try to keep an eye out in the chat room and answer your question for you. Question is Astronomy Ireland on tonight? Yes, it is. But first, after Space Pirate Radio, will be Comet Watch, then Astronomy Ireland, then Planetary Radio, and Naked Astronomy, all coming up after Space Pirate Radio. And we will repeat these programs every 4 hours for the next 24 hours. So we get plenty of chances to hear more programming. But this is the best time to come in for the chat room when we're doing our live shows. People that come in on off times, sometimes I see some posts, they'll stick around and on my chat room. And if I see something that somebody has a question, I'll try to answer it on Space Pirate Radio if I get a chance to, if it's still in the chat rooms. I get maybe 4 or 5 chats that linger in chat room in some off hours. So I try to get to them. Of course, the best, if you can ask your questions during the live portion, then you're more guaranteed to get a live answer. I encourage you to do that. Or sometimes people hang out in the chat room and you can answer other people's questions for them. I was more than happy to have people ask any question and we'll give you the best answer possible. All right, let's see where we want to go.
I got one little thing. All right. Well, I got stuff. We got stuff to go. But this here one came to me earlier. I'm going to need your help on this one. Because I didn't know how to answer this for the person either. Where did the names for the planets come from? I had to go find out, but I didn't know at the time. And you know, I said, I just don't know all the way for sure. I know there's Greek mythology and Roman mythology mixed together.
Right. They have two different names for the generally the same characters. I think, for instance, Jupiter and Saturn are Roman names, if I'm not mistaken. So I think most of them are named for Roman gods.
Like Saturn is Jupiter's mother.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. This is what I found. I had to go find this stuff out again. And then
Jupiter, generally the brightest planet, so it got to be the king of the gods, named after that planet. What else is there? Venus, you know, the morning star, evening star, nice, pretty all the time. So, goddess of love, Venus. Mercury, the fast one, because it's not up in the sky very often. Yep, goes around the sun rather quickly. It's in the morning, it's in the evening, it's more in the evening. So, the fastest one, Mercury. And what else is there? Mars, obviously a bit of a red tinge to it. So, god of war. Got that one. I do believe that's all Roman. And then the next one's out, more modern times, Victorian times, kind of kept with the theme. Isn't one of them, though, not Roman, it's a Greek god? Uranus is more of a Greek god, yes.
Yeah. Now, that I found out, that's named for Saturn's father.
Okay.
There, so you got Saturn's father and Saturn's the mother of Jupiter. I thought that was cool. Okay. What? I don't know why I didn't know that before.
I didn't know that about Saturn either. Let's see. One was named for King George of England, and then it got changed.
That was Uranus.
Was that Uranus? Okay.
Yeah.
Of course, different cultures had different names. So I'm sure in the Eastern Asia, they all had different names. Japan, China, India had different names for different planets too. So it took basically modern communication before everybody got together and decided on the same names, but I know there's still cultures that have different names for things like that too.
All right, what? Want to check out some weather on Saturn?
What's the weather on Saturn? Cloudy?
Pretty much like Earth. When it's raining, it's raining.
Uh-huh.
When it's raining, when it's raining methane, it rains just like on Earth.
And Titan?
On Titan, yeah. So what they're saying is the Titan's sculpted by its methane rains, the same as Earth is sculpted by our rains.
Mm-hmm.
Channels, valleys, canyons.
Lakes.
They have the same, they have a hydrodynamical cycle.
Okay.
Where they'll go from a gas to a liquid, liquid to a gas, mm-hmm. and then back again. Mm-hmm. Such an interesting planet. Just it's not a planet, it's a moon. Sorry.
Moon, yes.
Sorry,
just moon. Just a bit colder there for all that.
Yeah, just not a bit, nothing there for home.
Yep. It's all mostly methane. Lots of nitrogen-rich atmosphere. Well, the Earth has a nitrogen-rich atmosphere.
We're the only two they know of so far.
Yep, 80% approximately nitrogen here in the Earth's atmosphere. Just a little warmer. And then about 20% or less, I should say, oxygen. A little carbon dioxide thrown in there, too. Just make it fun.
Snows.
Yep.
But it's just, there's nobody home.
That we know of. Some extremophiles.
Yeah, I don't know how that would work. Pull it off. Here on Earth, it's really unique between our DNA and RNA. DNA may just be an Earth thing. It's just a mutated RNA, and it's Darwinian evolution. DNA just may be on Earth. That's the RNA hypothesis.
Well, they also find ice clouds on Titan. Noxious ice clouds. What do they mean by noxious? Let me put this article. Did you put that article in there? In our chat room? Is this the same one I have? Let me see what it is here.
This looks like the one I just posted.
Okay. I thought I clicked on it. Let's see. More extreme than Earth than we thought. Let me pop it.
But they
in
have
here.
Extreme methane rainstorms. That was the unique thing.
Is this slightly different or the same one? Let me click on yours and see if it's the same one. Weather in Saturn's moon is even more extreme and Earth-like than we thought. Oh, I think mine's a little bit different, actually.
Well, I'd like following what UCLA do.
Okay.
They spend a lot of time out there on this. Titan seems to be one of their specialties.
Okay.
So they're always posting on it.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. This one is about, noxious clouds. Noxious ice clouds on Titan. What does that mean it's got in it? I don't know.
Methane ice.
Methane ice?
Nitrogen ice, yeah.
Okay.
They just don't have H2O.
Okay. Now, is methane like that odorless? Isn't it? Help identify hydrogen cyanide in the clouds over Titan's South Pole. That's a previous study. Oh, well, do more reading on this one. Don't go there. That's all
I
can say.
Yeah. And then on, what else was it? We were looking at? The other flyby of Jupiter? There's another video out. The latest flyby of Jupiter.
From Juno?
Yeah.
One of the past ones?
This is just, it's just absolutely amazing. The colors that it brings out. The bottom looks blue. Looks like Starry Night, like.
Mm.
I go Starry Night, the painting.
Uh-huh.
You see those swirls? They're called barges, are they? I don't know.
Remember.
York was explaining them to me one time.
Okay.
They described them as barges.
Barges.
It sounds like a pirate one.
Piratey, yes. I got to wait for my... Oh, good. My browser's locked up. We'll keep going.
Oh, no problem.
Oh, there we go. I got it back again. Let's see what else is happening. You've got a spacewalk coming up here. Come on, browser. Another few more days. I think it's Friday, a spacewalk. Sorry, I can't put
What are they going to do?
Spacewalk.
Yeah, do they got anything? Like, is it just for fun, or are they going to?
I can't quite get there right now, actually. So
okay.
I don't know. I'll try to get
I thought they might be installing another camera.
My computer's been getting wacky lately. It updated, of course, just a half hour before the show. I was wondering if it was going to update in time. Been happening a lot lately.
Oh, you're brave. Half an hour before showtime. You're brave.
Oh, I didn't do that.
Oh, the computer volunteered.
The computer volunteered that one, yeah. So much fun when it does that. Let's see. Is noxious similar to obnoxious? I guess so. It's just a matter of your opinion, whether you like it or not, I guess.
Depends on whether or not you went to finishing school, I guess.
That's right. What was I going to say about...
Did we cover Earth's new traveling buddy? It's definitely an asteroid, not space junk?
Nope, we did not do that. Nope.
Sorry, I interrupted you there.
That's okay.
Yeah, the Soyuz space capsule. You covered that one yet? No.
Nope. Right. It's something else I was going to cover, too, but I can't remember what it was. Oh, well. Keep going.
All right, this Earth new traveling buddy
okay.
is definitely an asteroid and not space junk.
Okay.
At the 49th Annual Division of the Planetary Sciences meeting in Provo, Utah, astronomers led by Vishnu Reddy at the University of Arizona confirmed the true nature of one of Earth's companions on its journey around the sun. And it wasn't a burned-out rocket, piece of rocket, or any other particular piece of space junk, which they thought it might have been.
Okay. So if I recall, it was like a small body that was basically
100 meters
in the same orbit as the Earth, going around the sun, and then it got locked into one of our Lagrange points, and basically it's in orbit around one of our Lagrange points, if I'm not mistaken. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, there's a video on the bottom here. So it does the same orbit as us around around the sun, but it leads us and then it falls behind us. So if the Earth is going around the sun, you stick your hand up, it's going around the palm of your hand.
Okay.
If you took a dinner plate up and you drew a picture of the Earth in the center, you just drew that, you stuck the center of the plate right along our orbit, this asteroid would fall around the outside of the plate as we went around.
Okay.
So it cuts out a tube.
I had more articles and I can't get
them. So they figured it was about 1 million years in order for it to be in this...
to catch up with us?
Well, in order to be in the stable orbit. It had been there. Yeah, it's about 1 million years.
The Lagrange points are kind of gravitationally balanced points. There's one between the Earth and the Sun, about 1 million miles away. So if you put something there, it tends to stay in that area. So the Sun's pulling it towards the Sun, and the Earth pulling it towards the Earth, and it's kind of equal gravity. There's also one on the opposite side of the Earth. I can't remember if that's about as far away also. But if you put something there, again, it's kind of a balance point between the Earth's gravity, kind of throwing it out into space and the Sun pulling it in. So that's one of the Lagrange points. There's also the points that are in the orbit of the Earth, ahead of the Earth's orbit and behind the Earth's orbit. So the Earth is basically pulling it around or pushing it around in its orbit. And things tend to stay there generally, at least for quite a long time, because the gravity is kind of balanced and it just kind of keeps going along.
This is unique. So this asteroid, it turns out to be just regular asteroid stuff.
Okay.
Nothing special.
Nothing special. They thought it maybe was a piece of space debris because it was in kind of with Earth's orbit around the sun. So they figure, well, it might have been part of a satellite that just kind of blew off and just kind of kept going around and then kind of developed its own orbit and then got stuck in one of the Lagrange points. But now they prove it is a space rock.
Yeah. We were talking earlier about the Discovery Channel telescope they use for it?
Yeah.
It was large binocular telescope and the Disney Channel telescope.
Okay. I don't remember the Disney Channel telescope or just fake.
Discovery Channel. Did I say Disney?
Discovery. No, I said Disney.
Yeah, I did say Disney, but it is Discovery Channel.
Discovery Channel. All right.
Either way, it's like Discovery Channel, but that was the old Discovery Channel. Well,
if it was Disney.
Before aliens.
If it was a Disney telescope, it's probably a multi-mirror telescope with a smaller mirror and two bigger ones off of each side.
I think a lot of us could picture exactly what you're talking about for you.
Now, that would be a Disney.
Ears or sunshades.
Exactly.
But this Discovery Channel telescope. So this was when they used to do science. This before, I'm not saying it was aliens, but,
Mm-hmm.
Aliens. And speaking of aliens, Tabby Star, he's still locked up, so don't worry about it. Tabby Star, they found some more, they did some more surveying on that one. It gets more interesting the more they look. This time they covered all the wavelengths. They went through all the bands and over a year.
Okay.
Quite a bit of surveying on it. And what they found is it got brighter in the lower bands.
Okay.
So the objects, whatever they are that are surrounding Tabby Star, which makes the star go brighter and duller, are very small.
Okay.
Grain size. In order to get these wavelengths, in order to get the change in the brightness that you can see in the different wavelengths, they would have to be very small objects. Grain size.
So I think
it gets more interesting. But there's a recent paper out where they're measuring that the star is actually brightening.
Well,
the dimming. See, a dimming, they caught it on the dimming because whatever's going in front of it, whether it's a Dyson sphere, the remains of a Dyson sphere, or a planet, or whatever it is, comets was another one. It's this new paper suggesting that they're actually measuring a brightness now. Now, how do you make a star go brighter with stuff flowing around it?
Well, is it brighter than it normally is, or have we just been looking at when it's dim, and if you get rid of the dust in front of it? Yeah, so I think the latest I heard is probably a cloud of dust in orbit around the star. So we first saw it was obviously a lumpy dust. So it would get dimmer, brighter, and now that dust is clearing out and going to go around the star back again later, then it would be brighter. It kind of just depends on when you discover it.
It's an interesting little star.
Mm-hmm.
Peculiar. But then, of course, these pulsars were little green men at one time.
That's right. Neutron stars were called little green men because they were getting pulses that were regular. So what could possibly make regular, even pulses? Had to be an alien culture to do that. So, nope, did found something in nature that would actually do that. But they first started out kind of jokingly called them little green men.
Yeah, we never mentioned that. This solved the other question about where these short gamma ray bursts were coming from.
Mm-hmm.
It's these mergers.
Mergers of
these neutron stars.
Neutron stars, yes. They also get
because 30% of the ones they pick up in our Milky Way or just pick up are these short ones, short bursts.
Yes.
And these short bursts are associated with the exact type of merger and coalescence that these two neutron stars underwent. Soyuz capsule. What's up?
Oh, yeah, do the Soyuz capsule. That's what I was going to go for. Go for the Soyuz
capsule. Can you pick that link up out of the chat room?
I cannot get anywhere on my computer.
Okay, don't worry.
I'm so glad I'm able to keep talking and listening.
Oh, it's just us. We can talk all night.
I know.
Links? We don't need no links. Here we go. space news. Thank you, Michael Forrester, for the link. It looks like last April.
Okay.
I'm scrolling through here. Last April, the Soyuz reentry experienced a loss of pressure due to the final stage of its descent. During the final stage of its descent. But it did not put the crew's lives in danger. There we go. I'll put that in there. Didn't put the crew lives in danger. Basically, one of the straps, a big buckle associated with the harness for the parachute, come up and hit the side of the capsule, and it hit it on a weld.
Yeah.
On a seam.
Uh-huh.
And it was enough to trigger some decompression.
Yeah.
But it happened at the height where decompression can start to take effect.
Okay.
Because they're already starting to
pressurize, actually.
Yeah. So when it popped, there was an air leak.
So you got kind of a balance between in space where there's vacuum and to keep the capsules 3 to 5 pounds of air pressurized. And that's actually below atmospheric pressure. So when they'll start out in the vacuum and the capsule will be pressurized, or when it starts getting into the atmosphere, they actually have to let air into the capsule.
Yeah, at about 5 kilometers up.
Okay.
But this happened a little higher than 5 kilometers up.
So they did. So it was basically a little bit of both. It was depressurizing because they were still in some vacuum, but then shortly after that, it was able to pressurize just from atmosphere pressure.
But they talk about the reason why this is an important conversation is they talk about trying to come in with reentries without these suits.
Why they're
right? So these new so new launches, yeah. You know, we need to wear pressurized suits and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's extra weight. So if you think your capsule's, you know, really safe and secured, you don't need that extra weight. And, you know, why wear the suits? Well, like, obviously they just found another reason why you should be wearing your suit on reentry. It's kind of like airplane landing is the most critical time. So reentry into the atmosphere, more critical time. That's when everything starts to heat up, and well, part of it's supposed to heat up, part of it's not supposed to. Shake and bump around at air pressure changing. It's all got to be timed just right. Hopefully your parachute opens up, all that, and you lose some communication for a little bit. So that's when everything, if anything can go wrong, that's the time that it could go wrong. Like there were some Soviet astronauts, I think, that perished because they had a leak, right?
They did, yes. So this is very concerning to them.
Mm-hmm. And I can't remember if NASA astronauts, would they always wear their spacesuits on reentry or not? I don't remember. Do they wear it? Were they wearing them fully?
Yes. Oh, yeah, they had their suits on.
Okay.
So nobody was in danger, but you don't want this to be happening.
Yep. Oh, I'm sorry. I can't come up with any links or anything to talk about as my computer's just locked up. And at least I got...
We already did Japan Lunar Orbit Discovers a Cave in the Moon.
Oh, no, we didn't.
Didn't we do that?
We didn't do that one.
We talked about that earlier.
We talked about it before the show. Yeah, let's go there. Put that link in for us.
Drop that one in too.
So
a math guy trying to do science out here. This is so funny. Yes, I'm terrible at this because my background's mathematics.
Sorry, I can't get into the chat room either. So yeah, it looks like a black dot from the photograph that Japan's JAXA, right?
Yeah.
And which mission is it?
Japan's Lunar Orbiter.
Lunar Orbiter, okay. Discovered this
potentially suitable cave for shelter, to be used as shelter.
So basically, it looks like a black dot in its picture, so it doesn't even look real.
It just looked like another hole in the moon.
Exactly, like
another crater in the moon.
Without sunlight. But it's actually the entrance to a
50-kilometer or 30-mile long tunnel.
Lava tube.
Yeah, an old ancient lava tube.
Mm-hmm.
And the lava tube is 3.5 billion years old, which we were talking about moonquakes and whether or not it would affect such a tunnel. But at being 3.5 billion years old, and this tunnel's still there, so it sounds like it's not really susceptible to the moonquakes.
It should be good enough and thick enough, yeah, that it doesn't. Aren't the lunar rills, those little curvy lines, thought to be basically collapsed lava tubes on the moon? If I'm not mistaken. Have you seen rills on the moon before?
Yeah.
Kind of looks like a river. They're usually pretty crookedy and wiggly and stuff like that. So I thought they thought those might be lava tubes that had collapsed. So it would make sense that there would be uncollapsed lava tubes. Now, this one would also mean that there should be more lava tubes on the moon, just a matter of being able to find them. How did they find this one?
They use radio waves, too. Well, the lunar rover captured it, and then they aimed a bunch of radio waves at it, and they could measure it out with that.
Lunar rover or lunar orbiter found it?
Orbiter
found it. Okay,
orbiter found it, and then they directed their radio waves at it to measure it.
They first find the opening, or did they first
find... It's 50 meters in diameter, and it's 50 kilometers long.
Okay. Did it say if they first found the lava tube, or did they first find the opening?
They seen the opening.
Then
they measured the area, because it's so black. It does stand out a little bit different than the rest. Why is that one so black? Why is there just absolutely no sun?
Mm-hmm.
there's absolutely no shadow.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder if amateur, well, that would be 150 feet in diameter. You say it was the opening 50 meters?
50 meters, yeah.
I def-
50 kilometers long.
Right. Definitely too small for anybody to see with an amateur telescope. So you got to be pretty much in orbit around the moon in order to be able to pick that up. So we're not going to be able to try that one.
But it's so, home away from home.
Uh-huh. Got potential for...
potential to be home away from home.
Yep. If it's lasted this long, might be more openings to it. I've been in
a lot of... from the cosmic rays and the coronal mass ejections.
I've been in lava tubes in Hawaii before, walked through some. They're kind of interesting. Not always solid all the way down. Sometimes there'll be more openings in the ceiling of it. That is a long one, though, 30 miles. Mm. So, yeah, the potential of, you know, closing off an end and closing off partway down and still have, you know, more tube to go to if you can expand it quite easily. So it's got potential for living it.
Where do our imaginations take us? Oh, yeah, spray the inside with some sort of sealant to keep the dust down.
Keep dust down, or just once you get air blowing into it, then just basically filter all the dust out. Once you got air in it, potential living space for sure. I wonder if there's any. Would it have potentially any water ice in it? It might. Just like the craters at the poles are thought to have some ice in them, that ones that have been perpetually shadowed. Well, that might mean this one potentially might have some ice inside of it. Now, that would be an interesting thing.
Yeah, there's a lot more water on the moon than their earlier predictions. We talked about that a while back.
Uh-huh.
They discovered a lot more water on the moon.
Uh-huh. Now,
how did it get there?
Yes, well. Yeah. Cometary bombardment, I'd say, would be a pretty good bet that that's where it got from. We're talking earlier about civil sci-fi movies. One of them, there was two of them. One of them was Catwoman on the Moon, and there was another one.
Oh, you remembered that one, yeah.
Yeah, well, I can't remember the other one, but it actually used kind of the same premise, just a few years difference in it. And they used a lot of the same scenery and stuff like that, where they land on the moon. And they go
into scenery. Did you notice you mentioned scenery? Trees.
Yes. Yep. Well, they go into a cave, and first they discover there's air in the cave. Then they discover there's giant spiders in the cave. I mean, like 8 feet across, something like that. And then they meet the Catwoman on the moon.
There we go. We heard your big chimes going.
Yes. My clock's a little bit fast. We got about 3 minutes to go. Yes. It's
got a nice chime to it, Marty.
Well, thanks.
No, it does. It's got a nice charm to it. It's not obnoxious.
So we'll see what discoveries are still to be made in that cave and if it is usable. So that's going to be a good focus for a future mission then. That would be a good one to send a rover down into it.
Well, there's a little bit of canyon area there on the moon. They've checked that part out too. Okay. But it's... here, if you get a decent opening and you get yourself a decent entrance down, because you want to be able to take your moon buggies back out onto the surface, right?
Yep.
And if this can get you an entrance and exit, or they probably call it an egress.
Yes, ingress and egress.
Yeah. Whereas if you go down inside like a scar on the moon, you might have to climb in, climb out.
Uh-huh. You could put a secret entrance to it. And have your Bat Rover go in and out that way.
You're thinking Dr. Evil stuff, aren't you?
No, I'm thinking
you just had to go there.
Batman and Robin stuff. That's where I was going with this. Batman and Robin on the Moon. That'll be the next movie out there, I think.
Yeah, Batman. Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
That's right. The quote of the night. Well, everybody, on that note, it's about time for us to head on out of here. Appreciate everybody listening in, and thanks everybody in our chat room. Appreciate you being here. Don't forget, we're going to repeat this program every 4 hours for the next 24 hours. And coming up, we've got Comet Watch, Astronomy Ireland, Planetary Radio, and Naked Astronomy, all following Space Pirate Radio. All right, we'll be back again next week. Diane should be back again next week, too. I want to thank my co-host, John. Really appreciate you being here tonight.
Always a humble pleasure. Thank you.
Yes, and you were actually able to read the computer where I couldn't do that for the last 20 minutes or something like that. So appreciate that. So I got to get my internet figured out soon. All right, everybody. Time for us to head on out of here. Back all next week. Thanks a lot. Good night, all.
Good night.
We hope that you've enjoyed this program from AFM Radio, the broadcast service of Astronomy.fm. This program has been released under Creative Commons license. Please contact us for details. You may find more of our AFM original programs on our website. It's really easy to find us. We are Astronomy.fm. You may also find us in the iTunes radio listings near the top of the News Talk section, and also as an iTunes podcast selection. We'd love to hear your comments. Please email us at radio@astronomy.fm. Thanks so much for being part of the Voice of Astronomy. Around the world and across the known universe, this is Astronomy.fm Radio.
AFM.